And I'd like to invite any comments or questions, or if anyone just has any good jokes they'd like to share with us, that's also okay.
Can I start with one?
Yeah.
Just basically, I'm not sure exactly what you want. I think I remember what you're trying to get at. I suppose you're getting at there is a kind of fulfillment to be had in all the life by having ones there, with kind of psychological fulfillment you couldn't have without ones. But it seems to me that this unity, if you like, of the masculine and the feminine, it really happens when you enter the child. That's what actually happens, because you actually go beyond gender, you go beyond the masculine and feminine. And that's where you actually find that unity. You know, you have both the wisdom coming from the deep samadhi, but also have the emotions coming from that one. So you don't actually necessarily need the feminine in the life of a monk. As long as you practice correctly and you use the states of samadhi, that will actually be the ultimate answer to that unity, or whatever you want to call it.
Absolutely, yeah. That's absolutely true, I think I mentioned when I wrote my first book, Swift Pair of Messengers, that in a sense that the samatha qualities are all the feminine qualities. Vipassana qualities tend to be the more masculine qualities. And so there's always this balance of these things. So definitely that's the case. But that's talking already at a much higher plane. So, you know, when you're talking in jhanas and samadhi, you're already beyond gender. And so the kind of level of development I'm talking about, because again it's from the Jataka stories, so it's talking more about a basic personality development rather than a higher level of spiritual development. So somebody who already has that basic level of personality development, then that doesn't matter. You know, for many people that just happens naturally in your life. And so then you can go off and meditate, and then that's not a problem. It's not something you have to really think of. But it's something that I've been forced to think about. Because what happens when that doesn't work? Why is it that these things do become issues? And so then begin to understand, well, that there are problems where sometimes the personality isn't properly developed and fully formed. And I think in that case, then one's attempts to develop samadhi in the higher dhammas are not going to be successful, or will only be partially successful. Well, that's how the Kuni role is integrated in the model. It's a very interesting thing. I mean, you can think of, say, for example, you know, if you think of the higher developed feminine qualities, then you might think, for example, qualities like, say, compassion or something like that. Again, these are just kind of ideas or symbols or way that we use things. It's not necessarily any specific thing. But I think it is interesting. Well, one thing that I would say is that as part of the way that the mind works is that we do move towards a transcending of gender. The difference between bhikkhus and bhikkhunis is much less than the difference between laymen and laywomen. Yeah? Laymen and laywomen wear very different clothes, they have very different hair, they do different kinds of things. And bhikkhus and bhikkhunis are pretty much similar. The gender differences are starting to fade away already. Yeah? And as to what in real life actually the bhikkhunis will symbolize, it's hard to say. In some places it manifests in terms of a greater level of social engagement, compassionate action in the world. You see that a lot in Taiwanese Buddhism especially. But that's a particular historical context. How that will happen in Theravada Buddhism I think is very interesting, and in the forest tradition, and I think we really don't know the answer to that. That's something that we'll only learn as we go along, is what particular qualities that we see evolving within the bhikkhuni community as compared to the bhikkhu community.
What would you hope for, personally?
What would I hope for? Well, a few things I'd hope for. One, some better chanting. That's the most important thing. I went to this Indonesian monastery a couple of years ago, and it was a Dhammayut place there. It's a very nice monastery, very nice monks there, and it was on a Waisak or something. There's a big gathering of monks, and they did Paritta chanting, and honestly, it was like, I was thinking, they really could do with a bit of feminine emphasis here to kind of soften the chanting sound down a little bit. So that would be one thing. Perhaps I think one thing that you do see emphasized in women's communities a bit more is an emphasis on community and relationship as such, which is I think is something neither good nor bad, but something which is suitable for some people in some contexts. What would I hope for? I would hope for It's difficult to say. It's something I think it's difficult to really pin down. What I would hope for is for a fruitful synergy or interchange of ideas and ways of being and ways of being monastic, which would be useful for both, and I think that'll happen in different ways in different times. And remembering that these things, they can be very, very subtle and very, very small, you know? Like that story where the peacock goes, all he does is go and give one short teaching and then goes back to his cave. It's not like kind of a big deal in a sense, but it's just that little bit is the thing that makes all the difference. Yeah. Yeah, very much so. I think that's a good point. Yeah. So just that gentleness. We try. You know, monks try, and we don't do too bad a job a lot of the time, but still not quite the same.
What about spiritual marriage?
Spiritual marriage. You, in what?
Given context, it appears that the female desire is almost doing the procreation. So, if we're talking the relationship more sister and brother, there is that spiritual desire, that desire for procreation is missing. So, maybe marriage is not exactly that. Let's say spiritual union to some kind of creation, which has strong ability foundation for the rebirth process.
Foundation for what? Sorry?
Rebirth.
Oh, rebirth.
That white day means?
Yeah.
This strongly associated in my opinion with that one's desire for creation.
But one of the things that, this idea of the divine marriage or the sacred marriage is also quite an interesting idea. And, of course, you know, it's something which can be seen as very ambiguous, that on the one hand you say, well, a marriage is, you know, people enter into a relationship where they're licensed to have sex, right? But on another way of looking at it, what marriage means is, in fact, not a license to have sex, but what it means is a restriction of one's sexuality to another person. Yeah? So it means it's a binding, culturally endorsed binding of the promiscuous state of nature. And it means that one marries a person, right? So that one's not purely having a sexual relationship. So in a sense, compared to, say, a promiscuous and hedonistic lifestyle, then a married lifestyle is a spiritually elevated sense. In various kind of stories and so on, where I mentioned before that the idea of the anima or the animus, and that having that relationship, when that's talked about in different places, then sometimes that involves an actual marriage, and the outcome is an actual marriage. So, for example, you have a very common tale of the hero who rescues the princess from the dragon, for example, or from the castle or something like that, and then they get married. You know, so in that case, there is a sexual relation there. But there's also many other times when it doesn't involve that. I mentioned before Luke and Leia in Star Wars, where they're initially attracted to each other, but then they realize that they're brother and sister, and so it has a different kind of tone to that relationship. So what that shows is that relationship is not essentially a sexual one. Yeah, it can have that dimension in some people, but that's not really the essential part of it.
Just one thing I'm interested in is not the play the male female, the idea of individuation and anatta.
Individuation and anatta?
Yeah, well, Jung was always talking about becoming a whole integrated person, but then the idea of not trying to not be a person at all.
Yeah. Well, with that, I mean, always remember that the arahant is called Bhavitatta in Buddhism, one who has a developed self. Yeah? So it always depends on what you mean by these things. Jung was not a transcendental theorist. Yeah? He wasn't talking about enlightenment. So he was talking about personal development and, again, becoming a whole person. In a relative sense, then, yeah, what he was talking about makes perfect sense, that the one should develop and become a balanced person and so on. Anatta is really a very high level teaching. But the critical thing and then the practical thing there is that anatta is very attractive, and wrongly so, to people who actually have dysfunctional selves. Yeah, and you often find that people whose personality and character is actually neurotic, fractured, basically crapped up, are attracted to the idea of anatta, especially people who are very nihilistic. You have that vibhava tanha tendency. And for them, the anatta teaching is the worst possible thing to teach them. Yeah. So for them, you need to teach metta, you need to teach kindness, and exactly those things of becoming a whole person. When they're a whole person, then, okay, you can take a hammer and smash it to bits. Yeah. But that's something in Buddhism which can be very dangerous. And if you're not, as a teacher, if you're not aware of that in students, then the teachings of anatta can be quite dangerous, especially when it's combined with intensive meditation.
Sorry, the other thing which it occurs to me, like if you're going to look to the Vicurian community, for example, or the Buddhist community, for certain qualities which may be lacking in the Vicurian community, it's very easy then to, instead of actually looking into the community in such a way that you enhance those qualities within yourself, and that you actually, instead of doing that, you become attracted to this women precisely because you see something there that you don't have yourself. It's very easy for that desire for increasing good qualities in yourself actually to be almost like externalized or whatever it is.
Is
always a great danger there, because that is a kind of, particularly the lower
SU
development, is a more natural reaction.
Sure. And that's precisely that story of the ascetic who goes up to the palace and has to come down on the stairs.
Yeah. So it is a very kind of a subtle balance there.
It is. It's fraught. Like life is fraught. Yeah, absolutely. So, I also think that one of the things is that it allows monks to be men. You know? So when you're comfortable with that you also become comfortable with your own masculinity, And so you don't, yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's also why, you know, it's talking about stages of development. So in that case, you know, it may be suitable for someone to actually be like the peacock who just goes off and lives in isolation for many years. You know, and so for some people, if that's what they need, then that's just to do that. Yeah.
It's a great challenge to find the, you know, because you're talking about stages of development, and with the stages of development, the lay life, you can find a physical woman, a fleshly being, you know, another fleshly being, find the qualities in them that you don't have, and find the balance and so forth. But as monks, we have to take these aspects which you can call feminine but may not really be feminine, and integrate them psychically. So I'm just a little bit concerned, because what I'm hearing is a little bit of a conflation between a physical woman and a psychic a psychic aspect of the psyche. And as the monks, we have to focus on the aspect of the psyche and not on the woman. Historically, the woman has not provided this psychic integration that we're looking for, in as much as the woman doesn't represent entirely the motherly harmonious qualities. They might try and be harmonious, they might try and seek consensus more than the masculine man does, but the level of conflict within the Bhikkhuni community is just as great as within the monk community.
Of course,
they're not exemplars of what we're holding them up to be in reality. So what we have to do as monks is focus on what we need in our psyches and try to find, if we can, or if you can speak to this, to try and find how we find in our psyches these things without necessarily, you know, projecting them out onto this, onto the women.
Yeah, and that thing of projecting is actually extremely important, because yes, of course you do, and of course, you know, you have this ideal like, and of course we know as monks that that's the same thing, isn't it? It's actually one of the most important things as monks to deal with, because in a sense when you put the robe on and you shave your head, is what you're doing is you're making yourself into a blank screen for everybody else to project their ideal onto you. Yeah, and this is a very important aspect of the monk's life, and something we really need to be very aware of. We're carrying around everybody's projections. So all the lay people see us whenever you're walking down the street, anywhere. Going to the train station, you're the monk. You're not an individual. So this, yeah, it's very important. And of course, yeah, there's a difference between the actual behaviour of people who are just people, and then these ideas in the mind. And then, and as you know, sort of emphasised that a feminine quality is nothing, is actually nothing. It's just a quality which is seen or conceived in a way as being feminine. Yeah. But you're quite right that the anima development in men. See, this is how Jungians would explain love at first sight. And when two people see each other and fall in love, that's because each of them has an anima, an animus image, which corresponds with the external form of the other person. And so someone, you see that woman, literally the woman of your dreams, actually. And this is actually found in the stories as well, where you have the story, for example, of Mahakasapa and Bhadra Kapilani, where he says, "I'm not going to get married," and they said, "You know, you have to get married." And he says, "Okay, well, I'll make an impossibly beautiful woman out of a golden statue." And they travel around the country. So he's made this image out of his mind, out of gold. They travel around the country. And finally they say, "Oh yeah, she looks, this statue, it looks just like this woman who lives over here." And of course she's just been reborn from the Brahma realm. Yeah, this again is an archetypal story, it's found in several different places. And she looks just like him. And then they have a marriage, but it's a perfectly spiritual marriage. They don't have sex. They sleep in bed at night with a flower lying between them to keep them separated. Yeah, and eventually, of course, they end up going forth. So that's precisely the idea, where he's had this anima image of the golden statue, and then does it. So yeah, it's not those two domains are by no means separate. They're constantly affecting each other.
So how do we as monks work with those psychic energies, the psychic forces,
yeah.
And keep, and you know, how do we find a feminine model that isn't, you know, the real, you know, the physical thing?
Oh, just do your best, I guess.
I mean, can we think of other terms for it? Do we have to call it him?
I don't have to, it's just a term. I don't know if there's any better way of talking about it.
Because I'm just reminded that, you know, the Buddha says, the Buddha says, you know, monks, you have no mother, you have no father, so who else will care for each other?
If not each other, yeah.
Right. That's an example of the monks bringing up in themselves, or being urged to bring up in themselves the qualities that are no longer there for them in the lay world.
Yep.
So in the same way, the woman is no longer there for the monk in the lay world.
Mm.
And so the Buddha is encouraging them to bring that up psychically. So how can the monks do that?
Yeah, well, that's the question we all have to answer, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And of course, this thing, I mean, I'm just talking about it because the gender issues have become an issue for us. But actually, at the end of the day, the humanity is the first thing. I mean, you know, gender and masculinity and femininity is very much a secondary characteristic. The primary thing is that we're all human beings. We have far much more in common than we do have that's different. Okay, so maybe we should finish up here. We're going to have a big day tomorrow. So, do we need any announcements or anything we need to make?
No? I think I need to do that.
Okay.